Creative Babble.
Warning, this episode will make you very, 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 very sleepy. Before we start this week's show, I just want to remind you that this is part two of The Hypnotist. If you want this episode to make sense, I suggest you start with part one. When I first met Mike, the hypnotherapist, he was a little wigged out by me.
Well, yeah, I said I wasn't interested in being on a podcast.
But over time, I earned his trust, and he agreed to hypnotize me free of charge, but only under one condition. I couldn't record the session. I agreed. Honestly, I wanted to be in the moment. I didn't want to be wearing my producer hat. But Mike surprised me. After the session, he told me that he recorded the whole thing and that it was all right for me to use it. So let's get this episode going. I'm Javier Leyva, and this is Pretend. Stories about real people pretending to be someone else.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watching on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
It took me a few days to listen back to this recording. I was worried I would sound silly, but I was also curious if I remembered everything accurately. Before I play you the tape, I want to go back to my friend Nolan's house. We recorded immediately after my session.
So I get there tonight and he has an office here, you know. I walk in and we chit-chatted a little bit and he sat me down. He had like a comfy recliner. I took my shoes off because I wanted to be relaxed, you know. He told me to wear comfortable clothes and I lay there and he started the session.
You're floating and drifting now, Javier. And as you float and drift, imagine you're in a beautiful field, below your feet.
So he started going through this guided meditation, and of course he has like a really calm voice. And
the grass is so green and plush and soft, and you feel so calm and relaxed. And all around you are the beautiful flowers, reds, the oranges, the yellows, the greens, the blues.
And slowly that turned into he wanted me to envision this rainbow and all the colors. And what I thought was really interesting about that is how vivid, I don't know if it's just my imagination, but like how vivid this guided meditation was. He's describing this rainbow and I'm seeing this very, very wide rainbow where I could just walk right up to it. I walked right up to the color blue, and I almost like a waterfall. Like I went into it, you know, and it was just like soaking me in blue. Like I was like trying to get into it, you know. I was like.
By the way, I listened back to the tape, and there was no mention of a rainbow. My imagination took his guided imagery and just ran with it.
Now, as you're there, a big, beautiful kite appears. It's a very special kite. This kite is special because you can take anything that's holding you back in life, anything you need to let go of, and you'll pin it to the kite. So I'm going to count back from 10 to 1. And as I count back with each number, you will go deeper and deeper to sleep. Going deeper and deeper now.
Deep sleep.
And he started telling me to think about things that are stressful and attach it to this kite. And the kite starts lifting, and I'm attaching all these things, and I'm letting go of the kite, and it's getting further and further up in the sky. And then I cut the string, and the kite just takes off, and I felt
lighter.
It was really weird. I know it sounds crazy.
No, it doesn't.
Releasing any stress, any worries, just letting it go, just pinning it to the kite. 5, continuing to release now. 4, 3, deeper and deeper. And 1. And the kite goes higher and higher and higher, becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. Higher and higher, smaller and smaller. And now the kite is just so, so far away. It's a mere speck in the sky.
There were times where I know that my arms weren't moving, but like I felt like they were lifting, you know? Mm. It was really weird, like the Ouija board or something.
Yeah.
That no matter how much you try to see it, you cannot see the kite. You cannot see the kite, Javier. Can you see it? No.
And all that was great. I really enjoyed that part of it where he's trying to get me to that zone. But then it almost seemed like he abruptly got me to that kitchen where it happened.
Now in a moment, I'm going to count back. And as I count back, you're going to drift and float back in time. And you're going to go back to that time when you're in the kitchen.
And that kind of took me out of it a little bit because I felt like I was getting in the zone, but I was not in the zone.
8. Drifting and floating back in time.
His office was near a main street, so I could hear the traffic going, but it wasn't distracting. Like, he definitely got me in the zone.
And when you're ready, tell me what it is you notice, what's happening.
So I see the round kitchen table. It's made out of wood, and these wooden bowls I remember from my childhood. And I see my mom in the kitchen just preparing food and maybe doing something else.
What else do you notice aside from the table and the bowls and mom being there?
The TV's probably on in the corner. And
observe your mother. What do you notice about mom?
I don't really see her much in the scene. I know she's there. And I see the sofa in the living room now. It was like a wooden frame with like a flower print, cushions. I mean, I know I was in a walker.
Okay.
Kind of see my socks as a little kid, you know, just pushing the floor.
Yes.
I remember being happy, I guess.
Okay. Just going deeper and deeper. Just relax into the scene more and more now. Relaxing more and more.
And so now he's having me describe the kitchen for him. And it was weird because I don't want to make anything up. I'm conscious enough
that the kitchen looks like.
I know what the kitchen looks like. I grew up in that house.
Yeah. So how long were you in that house?
Well, it's still my grandmother's house.
It still is.
But it's not. It doesn't look the way it did.
Well, it doesn't, but you still have an entire lifetime's worth of memories of compound memories of what it looks like.
Oh, yeah. I know that space very well. But what's funny is that he's having me describe this whole scene. And guess what? I'm seeing it from the walker. Like, I'm looking up at the counter. I'm looking up at the kitchen table. That's what was weird about it. But I don't know if that's just my active imagination.
Okay. Really, I just see myself just going from one end to the other, just having fun.
And let's just move forward a little bit in time, Javier. You're there in the kitchen.
I mean, I see the cord. It's just kind of plugged into the wall, but kind of peeking out from the counter.
So I'm not looking at it as a third person. I was looking at it from the baby's perspective.
Yeah.
And I thought that was...
Were you intentionally looking from the baby's perspective? Were you calling a memory of you being that size? Or were you saying, hey, because I was this size when that happened, I would see it from this perspective, and you're creating the memory or creating the vision in your head from that perspective?
To me, it felt like the latter. Like, I was creating a memory.
You know that you were that height. And you
right. Can, like,
you,
I'm just
if
imagining.
If you know the space, you can imagine it.
Yeah, I know the space, and I'm imagining what the vantage point would be for that little baby. But that's the weird thing. That baby didn't feel like it was me. No, it was like I was role-playing or something.
Correct. Yeah.
You know?
If it was the baby's vantage point, this is what it would look like. You're recalling it.
It was no different than walking up to that rainbow, stepping into it. You know, I've never walked into a rainbow and showered myself with these colors. You know what I mean?
Right.
But it felt just as real as that, you know, which to me is not proof that that really happened or that I was actually remembering something.
I'd like you to step out of your body, Javier. I'd like you to imagine you're watching the scene. You're not in it. You're observing. When the cord gets pulled, and what happens?
I mean, I guess my mom rushed into the room to hear what happened, to see what happened. Imagine that there was a lot of crying involved.
How was the child doing?
I think the child is scared because he didn't know what was going to happen.
How bad was the accident? What do you notice?
I don't know. Just a lot of screaming and yelling. I imagine my mom didn't know what to do.
But I was trying to play along.
Right.
That's why I felt like it happened too soon when he took me to the kitchen, because every time he asked me questions, I was telling him what other people have told me.
And what happens next?
I mean, I'm recalling from the stories that people have told me, but my mom tells me that my great-grandmother, she splashed cold milk on me to stop the burn. The only other thing I know is a neighbor from across the street rushed me to the hospital because I guess they thought that would be quicker than getting the ambulance.
Let's just flow into the memory. Let's not go by conversations you've had. Let's just be in that scene.
He kept telling me, don't tell me what other people had told me. Tell me what you're seeing now.
Notice your grandmother. What do you notice?
I imagine I'm in the bathtub, just laying there crying. and the skin just kind of peels right off of me, you know?
Mm-hmm. About how old are you?
8 months.
8 months.
And at that point, he wanted me to step out of the of that vantage point of the baby. Okay. And describe what happened next. And I'm like, now I feel like I'm just making shit up. Because right. I'm like, I don't know what happened next. I said, I guess my mom found me and started screaming. And then I guess, you know, I heard the story about my grandmother putting cold milk on my body. And then I would imagine that somebody wrapped me up.
But you're literally just spitballing. You're but I'm just up what would have happened. Not, right.
But yeah. I don't know if he was frustrated or not. He didn't. Afterwards, he didn't say he was frustrated. I just couldn't get myself to play along. Like if I'm actually remembering something, because I know I wasn't, but I'm trying to imagine what happened. I guess what was valuable about it is that it got me back to that place, and I was able to remember details about that setting that I probably didn't recall before. Things that were in my mind, but not easily accessible, you know?
Did you do any pre-work?
No.
Did you look at any photos or
anything? Oh, no. In fact, I purposely just stayed away from everything, and even the drive to there, I'd try not to think about it or anything like that, because I didn't want to contaminate it, you know?
Now, in a moment, I'm going to count up from 1 to 5, bringing you back to this present time and space. But before we do that,
here's one thing about the hypnosis session that I thought was really, really interesting. I thought it went really fast. You know how I told you that I felt like he just jumped right into the kitchen scene? And I was like, why is he rushing this? And then he starts walking me out of it. You know, he's like, now he's doing the countdown to get me back into consciousness. I'm like, what's he doing? We're just getting into this.
And now when I say 5, the new Javier will open his eyes and come back fully alert, sound in body, sound in mind, and in total control of his feelings and emotions. Returning here now as I count up at 1, 2, 3, beginning to awaken. 4, becoming very aware this time in space. And 5, eyes open, awake, rested, alert, and...
And when I came out of it and I said, how long did that last? And he goes, oh, that was like an hour. It felt like 15 minutes.
Yeah, really? That the whole thing felt like 15 minutes?
It felt like 15 minutes. It literally was an hour. We right. started at 7, ended at 8.
Yeah. Well, it's like a massage.
Yeah.
You ever had a good massage?
I don't like people touching me.
You don't?
I don't feel like I recovered a memory that was lost or anything like that, but I can tell you that it was very relaxing and it wasn't painful to go back to that scene. I thought the experience was positive, but I don't know if I believe in it more now than I did.
It's funny because after I left Nolan's house, I kept remembering more and more details about that time period. More images kept popping into my head. Even the next day, I could access memories I hadn't thought about in years. All kinds of visuals. It's like I was remembering a lot of things about that time period, all except the actual incident.
But here's the interesting part. I was able to remember certain things that probably 2 hours ago that I probably wouldn't have been able to tell you. So I remember the wooden kitchen table. It was like a round kitchen table like this. And I remember the wooden salad bowls that my mom used to have. Why would I remember that? That's so weird. And then I remembered the couch. I want to say it was like a wooden frame, but it had mango-colored cushions with flower prints.
Salmon.
But I remember that shit. And then I remembered the TV stand. I was remembering details of the room that don't exist now. But I don't know if those are just memories from my childhood or pictures from my childhood
right.
or different things from that I'm just compositing into this imaginary scene that I'm creating.
Well, but I think that's exactly what he's trying to do. He's guiding you through a meditation to relax your mind, to enable your mind to, maybe it does take work. As you start putting these things together and you're like, oh, like those weren't the bowls or the wicker thing just the day that you got the water spilled on you. They were always the bowls and the wicker thing at that time period.
Right.
Whether it came from a photo or a memory, somehow you know that. And you're putting that into the picture, and now the picture's a little bit more real than it was before you put those words.
Exactly.
When we come back, I'm going to contact my old neighbors, you know, the people who were there that day, to see if what I remembered was accurate.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Going into this thing, all I heard about the accident was the footnotes. I pulled the electric rice cooker, hot oil and water burned my body, my grandma dumped milk on me, my neighbor Leandro drove me to the hospital. That's it. No other detail about the accident. So essentially, I walked into this hypnosis session cold. The next thing I needed to do is talk to someone who was there to help me compare notes, to see if any of the visions that I saw during the hypnosis session was even accurate. So I called my old neighbors, who I haven't spoken to in more than 30 years. His name is Leandro. Well, actually, I called his daughter, Madeline, first because I didn't have his phone number. I didn't expect Madeline to remember the accident because she was only 5 years old. But boy, I was wrong. That day left a huge impression on her.
I wasn't there when it happened.
Madeline and her family didn't live next to us or across the street from us. They lived catty corner from my house.
They heard the screaming. My dad crossed immediately, and I guess my mom ran after. At some point, my mom came running, ran back, and she's like, get in the car. And I remember sitting in the back with your mom, my dad carrying you, and my mom driving. And there was a smell that I will never forget. I remember the windows were down. I remember we took, look how many things I remember. Like, I could take pieces back.
The smell. That was a detail I never even imagined or thought of. You would think that I would be able to recall that smell during the hypnosis session, but I didn't.
I could only imagine for you, you were what, like five? How old were you?
Five. Now I'm 43. Imagine.
Oh, yeah, that must have been like really traumatizing even for you, right?
So this is not something I think about. This is not something that comes to my mind.
You probably haven't thought about this in like 40 years or something. Yeah.
And when you asked the question, I was like, holy shit, it took me back to that moment.
But isn't that interesting? Because you didn't need hypnosis to get there, but I needed hypnosis to get to that place.
But I wasn't in a traumatic. You were. It's just the mind is something, and people don't understand. The mind is so powerful.
My whole life, I thought it was Madeline's father, Leandro, who drove me to the hospital alone. I didn't even know that his wife, Evie, and Madeline were also in the car. That was another detail left out of my hypnosis session. So I called Madeline's parents, Evie and Leandro, to see what they remembered about that day.
Evie, it's Javi.
Hi, honey. How are you?
Pretty good. How's it going? Oh, yeah, hace tiempo.
It's going. I know, man. It's been years. But to us, you're still our baby boy, you know?
Yeah. Wait,
I explained why I was calling.
Yeah, I think what she told me is that you wanted to hear more, a little bit more about what had happened to you during that period.
I was just wondering, could you just tell me what you remember?
Evie started recalling the same story I've heard before. So I pulled the electric rice cooker and I started screaming.
Screaming, and your mother, she started to scream and it was so loud. We were across the street and we heard it. I drove and Leo carried you. He was sitting in the front. I was driving, and your mom and Made were sitting in the back. And man, I was driving, and I took all the red lights all the way to 57. And then when Leo threw a towel, he was carrying you. With that towel, he will clean up a little bit, you know. But you couldn't even touch it that much. and God, and then Leo was crying as much as you. We were all crying as much as you were crying and screaming.
Oh my God! I'm really glad I don't remember any of this.
And that's how it all happened.
I asked her to describe what I was wearing. She said I was wearing diapers and a white T-shirt.
You were in a regular camiseta, white.
It only got my arm, my shoulder, and my leg, and a little bit on my stomach, but it was the worst was on my arm.
You know, everything was done very fast those days. I'm talking 40 years ago. Faster than it would have been if we would have called 911 and for them to get there.
Thank you so much. You guys saved my life, for real. That's crazy.
Well, we love you. You were like, you know, you were like my nephew to us, and you.
Then her husband, Leandro, got on the phone.
I remember, vaya, lo que más me acuerdo que tú gritabas tanto por el medio del camino, que estaba peeling toda el skin, estaba cocinado.
He said that the memory that replays over and over in his head is me screaming and my skin peeling off. He said that my flesh looked like it was cooking. It's funny how time fades away, even with the worst memories. Hypnosis or not, this tragic event has been reduced down to bullet points.
I'm lucky that you were my neighbors, you know?
Yes, we were blessed. Yeah. We had very good times together.
When we come back, we're going to talk to a Harvard scientist who spent years studying hypnosis. Let's hear what he thinks of all this.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
Irvin Kirsch is an associate director of the Placebo Studies program at Harvard Medical School. He has a very different take on hypnosis. He says that the effects of hypnosis can feel and be very, very real. But there's a catch. We'll get to that later. Yeah, so I started asking myself all these questions, like, is hypnosis even real? Do I even know what hypnosis is? And so I started asking a couple friends, you know, like, what do you think hypnosis is? And everybody had like a different answer. And it made me realize that I don't think anybody really knows what hypnosis is. So what is hypnosis?
Okay, well, one very traditional definition of hypnosis is that hypnosis is a culturally defined situation in which one person makes suggestions to another person for changes in experience and behavior.
You know, in the academic world, it seems like there's two ways of thinking about it. There's state and non-state hypnosis. Could you describe that and what they mean by that?
One of the traditional beliefs about hypnosis is that what you're doing is you're putting somebody into an altered state of consciousness, a trance.
And you might be surprised to learn that Dr. Kirsch is a believer in hypnosis. Is hypnosis real?
It depends on what you mean by real. Hypnosis, by in and of itself, doesn't do anything. But when you add hypnosis to a empirically validated therapeutic procedure, you can increase its effectiveness.
What he's saying is that not everyone should be doing hypnosis. He agrees with the American Psychiatric Association. They say hypnosis should only be conducted by trained healthcare professionals as a therapeutic tool, not by itself.
There are people who call themselves hypnotists, and they make suggestions to people for changes in their experience and behavior. That's real. And within the clinical setting, you have the qualified professionals who are psychologists, psychiatrists, physicians, nurses. And then you have what we call lay hypnosis. And they are people that don't have any qualifications to treat anything, who get a certificate in hypnosis. Sometimes They do that just by sending in a fee and getting the certificate by return mail without having any training whatsoever. No one should use hypnosis to do anything that they would treat anything that they would not be qualified to treat without it.
And so what got you interested in this topic and hypnosis?
Well, there were a couple of things that did. First, it started when I was an undergraduate student in psychology, and I got interested in the placebo effect.
A placebo is a drug or a treatment that doesn't really work. It has no real medical value. But if you're taking medication for, let's say, arthritis, and don't know that you're just taking a sugar pill, you might actually get the benefits of the drug and might actually start feeling better. But it was the placebo effect that got you into it.
Not just the placebo effect, but the broad interest, which even it's what led me to the placebo effect, is the effects of a person's beliefs and expectations. And I developed this notion called response expectancy.
Pretty quickly, Dr. Kirsch discovered that the placebo effect is not that different than hypnosis. Both of these procedures work because the patient expects it to work.
So it's interesting, just the power of suggestion alone could have the same effect on somebody as if they were to get themselves in a quote-unquote trance, right?
Almost the same. In fact, the difference is relatively small. What does make a difference is the individual. So some people seem to have a greater capacity for altering what they're experiencing in response to suggestion. But a person who is capable of producing a particular response seems to be, most people, almost as easy to do it without hypnosis as in. And that includes some of the very dramatic things like being able to create vivid hallucinations that are reflected in brain functioning as well, in the parts that are activating those parts of the brains that don't get activated when you just imagine something, but do when you see something. You can do this with a hypnotic induction, but those who can do that, most of them can do that almost to the same degree without the hypnotic induction.
And are we all susceptible to hypnosis? Are some people easier to hypnotize than others?
Well, some people seem more capable of responding to suggestion. Again, I don't know what does it mean to hypnotize, right? I can't think of a decent definition of it even, but some people have a greater capacity for responding to, I call them imaginative suggestions. I'm imagining I'm holding a heavy book in my hand. The book is pushing my hand down. I know there's no book there. I know there's nothing pushing it down, but I feel the heaviness.
Right.
And that's what makes the kind of suggestion that is characteristic of hypnosis, but can be experienced without the induction or the use of the word.
Right, because some hypnotists or hypnotherapists say that they could help people who are amputees who have phantom leg or phantom arm syndrome. I would imagine that that's the same kind of suggestion, right?
Yes, and they can help people. But it's not the trance that's doing it. It's the suggestibility of the person who's receiving the suggestion. When you do what's called conditioning, what you're doing is changing a person's expectations. And that the effects of these procedures are with Pavlov's dog. The dog is expecting to get the meat when it hears the bell. That's what it learns from that conditioning experience. You put a rat in a maze. And in one part of the maze, you put some food and the rat learns to expect that in this place, there's going to be food and starts running straight to it.
How do you apply this theory to everyday problems that people may be experiencing?
For people with positive attitudes towards hypnosis, doing so in hypnosis can make that even more powerful. One of the ways I think about hypnosis is that it's a non-deceptive placebo. There's the placebo effect, which is very powerful. We know that it can have lasting impacts on a number of conditions, but there's a problem. And the problem is that we assume that you need to think you're getting a real medication that you're not getting in order to have a placebo effect. So it's deceptive, and that's ethically problematic. There's nothing deceptive about hypnosis. You're not telling person anything that isn't true. You are can manufacture this in yourself. You have that capacity. I'm going to help you achieve that.
Dr. Hirsch says that just because hypnosis works, just like the placebo effect works, doesn't mean you should do it, especially what I did, trying to recover a painful memory. Whoops.
There are dangers involved because the experiences can be very convincing. There are therapists who go after past lives and early memories from the first year of life. We don't have memories from the first year of life, but we can manufacture them in our heads, and hypnosis may facilitate doing that, especially if you believe that hypnosis can produce these real memories.
It'll only work if you believe, but isn't that the case for everyone?
That part is true. It'll only work if you believe.
But regressing somebody back to an early childhood, let's say less than a year old, a child doesn't have language, doesn't have a way of forming memories. Is that even possible?
Right. No, that's the conventional view among memory researchers, scientists in the area of memories, and said, no, it's not possible. The memories don't exist. And memories don't exist in that way in general. You don't have a recording in here. You just got to play and you replay that. Memory is reconstructive. That means anytime you remember something, you're reconstructing the memory. And so the memory changes, or you just rehearse it over and over. So
it's never a pure memory.
It's never a pure memory, yeah.
Next time on Pretend. Many people assume that hypnosis isn't admissible in court, but they're wrong. There are people right now who could be completely innocent, sitting in jail, or maybe even on death row, who have been convicted because hypnosis was used against them as evidence in their trial. That's next time on Pretend. All right, so I want your feedback on this one because I really put myself out there with these two episodes. They're very different and they're very quiet episodes. They're very personal, so it's hard for me to tell whether you find it entertaining or informative or not. But I know many of you have opinions on hypnosis. So if you do, send me an email, javier@pretendradio.org. Also, I want to remind you that I partnered up with an independent artist to create custom collage artwork for each episode that's coming up. Her name is Colette Elliott, and you can find her at Colette Works on Instagram, and her work is fantastic. She created custom art for this episode. It's called Pretend Hypnotist, and I made a t-shirt. I'm going to make a t-shirt for each episode so that you too could own a copy of each episode. So go to pretendradio.org and hit merch, and you'll find this week's episode on a t-shirt. It's awesome. I bought one. It looks great. And for my Patreon supporters, I want you to know that this hypnosis series spawned off a whole lot of different content. The Harvard psychologist you heard from in this episode, Dr. Kirsch, well, he has a very controversial theory that antidepressants don't work. It's actually a placebo effect. And I'll have that bonus episode up pretty soon. Also, part 3 of this hypnosis series, which is a hypnosis in court, is going to be out pretty soon, too, on Patreon. Oh, and remember the penis lady? You know who I'm talking about. Her interview was so wild that I could have made a whole episode just on her. But so I decided to put the nearly uncut episode on Patreon, so you can listen to that there too. So there's lots of fresh material on Patreon right now that you should check out, or will be there soon. So anyway, again, happy Thanksgiving, and I hope everyone is healthy and safe, and we'll talk real soon. Creative Power.